I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. President Obama flew to a high school in Las Vegas yesterday to deliver his plan to overhaul the country's immigration system to help the 11 million illegal immigrants get on the right side of the law. He said the time was right for common sense, comprehensive immigration reform. He praised the bipartisan group of senators who unveiled their immigration proposal on Monday, although he cautioned that if Congress didn't act quickly, he'd send up his own bill. After years of debate and inaction, it looks like there is a growing consensus on overhauling both legal and illegal immigration, although there are still concerns and disagreements about implementation and fairness. That's our topic for today's Radio Times, and our guests join us here in our Philadelphia studio. Jan Ting is a professor at Temple University Beasley School of Law. From 1990 to 1993, he was on leave from Temple and served as assistant commissioner at the Immigration and Naturalization Service of the U.S. Department of Justice. His blog, Brandywine to Broad Street, appears at whyysnewsworks.org. And Jan Ting, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you. And Peter Spiro joins us as well, also a professor of law at Temple University. He's also a former law clerk to Justice David Souter. He specializes in international law, the constitutional aspects of U.S. foreign relations and immigration. And he's the author, most recently, of Beyond Citizenship, American Identity After Globalization. Peter Spiro, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Glad to be here, Marty.
Well, it's interesting that in 1 week we've got this group of bipartisan senators. We've got the president flying off to Las Vegas to give this speech. Would you say, Peter, that this is because of the election of 2012 in November, the results of that election?
Well, I think the election sent a very strong message that immigration reform is a political imperative, really. And so That's certainly a big part of the picture. I think it's also the case that President Obama thinks this is the right thing to do. And I think others who are coming in behind comprehensive immigration reform also think that there's a good to be done here, that something can be accomplished, that this is the right moment to take on this huge issue and do something that will make a difference on the ground.
Jen, do you think an election did what President George W. Bush was unable to do, which is to bring out some kind of consensus reform on immigration?
Well, I don't think it's going to pass. I think the politics of it govern everything. We haven't had a big national debate in this country on population growth, and that's the missing element. We have 300 million people in the United States. We're going to have 400 million people by the year 2050, and that's if we do nothing. And that's almost entirely due to immigration. Now, if we pass this amnesty, we're going to have more than 100 million people added by the year 2050. Where are we going to put 100 million people? It flies in the face of everything that President Obama says he stands for, narrowing the gap between poor and rich, moving to renewable fuel sources. We can't do those things. And let me just add, Peter and I were just talking, before the election, all we heard was jobs, jobs, jobs for the unemployed Americans. Since the election, we've heard nothing about jobs, nothing about jobs. No one's concerned about jobs. And we were just saying, hey, if you want to hire somebody, you're going to hire a legal immigrant if you can, because they're hardworking, and you're going to leave those Americans standing in the unemployment line. So I think there's a lack of concern here for unemployed Americans. We have a national tragedy in unemployment, almost 8% for years now. That's broken lives, broken families, foreclosed homes, life without health insurance, and we ought to be dealing with that, not worrying about people who have violated our immigration laws. I think there's
well, hold on one second.
Only it's going down.
I want to give everybody an equal chance here. Peter Spiro, do you have the same population growth concerns that Jan Ting has?
I think that's a complete red herring here. I mean, the key thing is that we have a population of 11 million individuals, many of whom have been here for many years, who are in effect a caste population, a second-class population. Of course, you can't call them second-class citizens because they're not citizens, but they are here living ordinary lives. They are, as President Obama said yesterday, a part of our social fabric, and yet they're deprived of very basic rights. When Jan finished his comments by talking about broken homes and broken families and individuals living without insurance, I thought he was talking about the undocumented population here, which certainly fits that description. So that's the immediate problem that we have to deal with, this large population of individuals who are already members of our community, worrying about population growth, which would depend on many, many factors decades out into the future, is really is really not an important part of this discussion.
One of the things that the president said, Jan, yesterday was obviously we're a nation of immigrants, but that immigrants have been played a very important role in the economy, not just as workers, but also as something like 25% of immigrants have been job creators, people that have created jobs and hired people in this country.
Of course that's true. Both of my parents were immigrants who contributed to this country. I have great respect and admiration for immigrants, as we all should, you know, but that's not the issue. The issue, I fundamentally believe, is how many. Given the fact that we respect and admire immigrants, are we willing to take every person in the world who wants to come to the United States in search of a better life? Or alternatively, do we want to enforce a numerical limitation on how many immigrants we're going to take? Now, it's every so often a little bit of truth comes out in the discussion, and one of the truths is you can't enforce a numerical limitation just through border security. That's true. Border security won't do the trick. You have to have interior enforcement. You have to discourage the people who are trying to decide whether to come to the United States in violation of our laws. And those people are always engaged in a cost-benefit analysis. They weigh the costs, including the risks of getting caught, against the benefits of having a better life in the United States. Unless you alter that cost-benefit relationship, you can't deter people from coming to the United States illegally. We're setting off this amnesty will set off a constant stream of people into the United States. If that's what we want, that's great. But I don't think that's what we want.
But my understanding, the president talked about this yesterday, is that the numbers of illegal immigrants coming into this country, largely from Mexico, has dropped precipitously, in part because there's a 700-mile fence there. We've got many more border guards. And we've also got a recessionary economy, so we don't have the jobs that are attracting people.
Well, 2 points about that. First of all, we don't know exactly. But second of all, they're still coming in, right? I mean, there's still a net increase of illegal immigration in the United States. It may be going up at a slower rate, but once the economy recovers, you know, it's going to be full steam ahead, and everyone's going to see that amnesty and say, why not? Why not come to the United States?
Go ahead,
well,
Pierre.
One reason not to come to the United States is that the economy in Mexico has gotten much better, so that's also a very important part of this picture. And to the extent that one gets more of an equilibrium situation between the two economies, there's much less pressure to come into the United States. At the same time, that I absolutely agree that there will be better opportunities here, and there will be incentives to come to the United States, and I think those should be accommodated through lawful immigration channels. And last year, there were actually fewer than 500,000 new arrivals who were given green cards. That's really not that high a number. And so I think there's a lot of room to expand that number, and almost by definition, to the extent that you expand lawful immigration, you're going to decrease undocumented immigration.
Well, let me just pick up on that, because what we're also learning from lawful immigration, it can take years, sometimes decades, for someone lawfully to become a citizen in this country. And the president, the bipartisan group of senators, talk about illegal immigrants getting at the end of the line. But if the line doesn't move, what have you accomplished?
The system is the system of legal immigration now is broken. This talk of a line is, in many cases, a cruel joke. Sometimes it can be more than 25 years long. You better be young if you're going to get into line. And so those lines have to be rationalized. There are some complicated explanations for why those lines exist, but I think that's an important part of this reform agenda.
The simple explanation is that we have the most generous legal immigration policy in the United States. We give out more green cards, permanent residence in the United States, and all the rest of the nations of the world combined. We allow up to 1 million people to get green cards every year in the United States. And the reality is there are many times more than that who want to immigrate to the United States and who are qualified under our legal standards to immigrate to the United States. That's why they end up waiting in line. You know, we're not even talking about the people who aren't qualified to immigrate to the United States but who want to come here anyway in search of a better life. It's perfectly understandable. They're making rational choices all the time. I mean, probably the majority of the people of the world, if they had a choice, would choose to come to the United States. Why not? Take a shot at a better life. Are we prepared for that? Because amnesty is opening the door to that. If that's what we want, then great. But if we want to continue to have the most generous legal immigration system in the world with a numerical cap on how many immigrants we're going to take, then this amnesty bill has to be defeated, and it will be.
Do you see this as amnesty, Peter?
Well,
it's a loaded
word. It's the third rail of immigration debates. The administration is very interestingly characterizing this as an earned citizenship program. So they're certainly avoiding the word amnesty. And by making it a threshold requirement that undocumented aliens pay back taxes, pay a fine, learn English.
Background check.
They're putting some kind of teeth into this notion of earned citizenship. Although I think in the end it is basically an amnesty, and I think that's okay. I mean, these, again, are people who have been here for a long time. They're just looking for a better life, as Jan puts it. Breaking the immigration laws are not like breaking laws that really have some moral foundation. And so I think it's actually appropriate to think of extending amnesties in this situation in the way that President Reagan did. So you have some interesting history here in terms of those who have supported amnesties in the past.
Jen, I know some tech companies say that they want more immigrants and frankly, more foreign workers. They need them for things, people that have science and technology skills. Does that seem like an appropriate request?
Absolutely.
And something that would be good for the economy?
That has already been passed by the Republican House of Representatives. Peter and I were just talking about that. The STEM bill was passed by the Republican House of Representatives. If the Democrats would support it, it could be passed today and it could be on the president's desk tomorrow. But the Democrats are holding out. The Democrats are holding all these other good ideas hostage to the big amnesty. That's what they want. In 1986, we called it an amnesty. It was openly called an amnesty.
Under Reagan.
This is the same thing. It's actually the same package. Give us the amnesty. We'll tighten the border. We'll threaten employers who hire illegals, and the problem will be solved. You know, the president himself said we need to finally put this issue behind us, as though you can ever put the issue of immigration behind us. That's like saying we're going to solve the tax problem once and for all. We'll never have to revisit taxes again. That's never going to happen. Immigration is always going to be with us. We constantly need to think about it and talk about it and regulate it, I think.
Do you agree with that, Peter?
Well, there come these moments, though, where you have to do something big, and that's one of these moments. I mean, the 11 million person population of undocumented aliens, really, there something just has to be done about it, which is not to say that immigration policy is going to go away after we have comprehensive immigration reform. So this is a moment that has to be grasped, I think, that has to be acted on, and I think there is now some political will to do it, which is not to say it's going to be easy. There's clearly a lot of sort of political kabuki that's going on here, and so it's going to be a tough slog, but if we're ever going to get immigration reform, it's going to be now. If we don't get it now, then we have a real sort of persistent major problem on our hands, I think.
Hold on to that thought only because we have to take a very short break. That's Peter Spiro, professor of law at Temple University, joining us along with Jan Ting, also professor of law at Temple University. And we are debating and discussing immigration and the proposed overhaul of our immigration system. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Art and Theater Company presents Nobel Prize winner Samuel Beckett's Endgame, now on stage through March 10th. Ham can't stand up. Clove can't sit down. Neither can leave the single room they've shared for who knows how long. For them, the end is in the beginning. Beckett's writing in the space between vaudeville and Pinter, Chaplin and Stoppard shows us that nothing is funnier than unhappiness. For tickets, 215-922-1122 or online at artandtheater.org.
I'm Marty Moscowane, and I'm here to remind you about the important role that you play as a supporter to WHYY and to Radio Times. We're thrilled you listen to the show and the station. Now take that next step and become a supporter. Here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY. And you can pledge online at WHYY.org. Where does your money go? Well, it gets invested in the interviews that you listen to on Radio Times. Today, we're getting two perspectives on overhauling the country's immigration system after President Obama's speech yesterday with two law professors from Temple University. And Eve Trout Powell, who teaches history at the University of Pennsylvania, is our guest to discuss her new book, Tell This in My Memory, Stories of Enslavement from Egypt, Sudan, and the Ottoman Empire. Here's that phone number, 1-888-345-9499. WHYY.org. Thanks so much for that pledge. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Mazgoane. Getting two very different opinions from Jan Ting and Peter Spiro about what to do about our system, our laws of immigration in this country. The president delivered a speech yesterday in Las Vegas. Earlier in the week, a bipartisan group of senators offered their proposal. And, of course, immigration is back in the news. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Jan, I hear your criticism and I hear your concern, but what do you suggest be done with the 11 million illegal immigrants living in this country? Do we deport them? Do they self-deport, as Mitt Romney suggested when he was running for president?
Well, you can't deport 11 million people. It would be too expensive. The alternative, first of all, if we pass the amnesty, we're going to have one amnesty after another. It's going to encourage more illegal immigration. The message is going to be clear. If you can get enough illegal immigrants in the United States, the Americans cave, and you have to grant another amnesty. They say, well, we've got millions of illegals now. Then we have to grant another amnesty, and then more millions will come in. Oh, now we have to grant another amnesty. If that's what we want, that's fine. What's the alternative? The alternative is to deter people from coming. You don't have to get the number of illegals down to zero, but you have to get the number shrinking year after year after year. Now, the number goes down naturally in some senses. People leave, go back home. Some people die. Some people find a way to legalize their status in the United States. So the number of illegals is going down every year. But the problem is more people are coming in, and that's what's keeping the illegal population large. If we can somehow get the number coming in illegally down a little bit and get the number leaving the United States up a little bit, we can actually reduce the number of illegal aliens in the United States year after year after year. That should be our goal. That can be done. We need more enforcement. We need to stop this prosecutorial discretion policy that the Obama administration has instituted, where they're basically not enforcing the immigration laws. We need to enforce the immigration laws in the United States and send a message to people that there really is not a pathway to citizenship through illegal immigration.
Well, Peter, let me just pick up on that, because what the bipartisan group of senators have suggested, and President Obama seems to largely agree with this, is that if you sort of come above board, you have to pay your taxes, you have to pay possible fines, there has to be a background check, you need to learn English. I mean, that there are some hurdles to getting in this very slow-moving path to citizenship. Do you see that as the kind of draw that Jan sees for more illegal immigrants coming to
this country? Well, I understand Jan's concern here and the concerns of restrictionists. The fact is that a large group would be granted so-called probationary legal status right away, which would give them work authorization. And so that's a big part of of what everybody's interested in. And so even with these hurdles in place to get full permanent resident status and then citizenship, there's something up front that's very important. I don't see Jan really offering much of a solution, though, for the 11 million. I mean, it almost sounds like dealing with the problem through attrition, which would really take many, many years to deal with a population of 11 million individuals. And so I think really something has to be done now. At the same time, that I understand the concern about cycles of amnesty, and that's why other parts of the package are really quite important here. And sort of rationalizing the legal immigration process is really a key part of the picture, so that the demand for immigrant labor and the justice behind achieving family unity and other goals of immigration really have to be dealt with up front.
Jan, let me pick up on something else, and let me toss this at you. And these are the children of illegal immigrants, often referred to as the Dreamers, who were born in this country. What should be done, from your perspective, for these Dreamers?
Well, I think if the Dream Act were reintroduced as a separate piece of legislation, it would probably pass. And I think it probably should pass. That's the most sympathetic group of illegal immigrants in the United States are people who came in as children. So again, I think if we took a piecemeal approach to immigration reform and introduced the STEM bill that's already been passed by the House of Representatives, an independent DREAM Act, that would all pass. But the problem with the amnesty is that there are billions of people outside the United States who would like to accept the deal that's being offered. They're willing to take a criminal background check. They're willing to pay any fines and taxes. They don't owe any taxes, but they want that deal. There are billions of people, and we have to decide in the United States, are we willing to take billions of people who are willing to take this amnesty deal?
Go ahead,
this is
Peter.
Really a red herring, I think. I mean, we're talking about a million people now who are being given green cards, half of whom are already in the country. It's not billions of people who want to come to the United States. There are lots of costs to moving. Even if we just opened up the borders, there wouldn't be billions. And nobody is talking about opening the borders. We're talking about rationalizing the system of legal immigration so it better matches what's good for the country.
And the idea of controlling the numbers of people that come into the country looking for green cards, coming above ground to be considered for citizenship.
Absolutely. That's one way of thinking about it, is just bringing immigration more above board rather than dealing with a system which, if it's not fixed, is just in perpetuity going to result in large numbers of individuals coming here illegally.
Jan, let me read something that Marco Rubio said, a senator from Florida, Republican, said, "We are dealing with 11 million human beings who have come here in pursuit of what all of us would recognize as the American dream. I live surrounded by immigrants. My neighbors are immigrants. My family is immigrants, married into family of immigrants. I see immigration every single day. I see the good of immigration." You see the good as well?
Absolutely. A lot of us can say what Senator Rubio is saying. I have a similar experience. That's not the issue. The issue is how many immigrants are we willing to take into the United States? Are we willing to take unlimited immigration? Because, you know, what we're doing with an amnesty is we are lowering the costs. You know, Peter says there are costs that are deterring people from coming to the United States illegally. But if you grant an amnesty, you're lowering the costs. We already have less enforcement. That lowers the costs. And the benefits are tremendous now because they know if you get enough illegals into the United States, you get another amnesty. That pattern is clear. We've done it before in 86. Every time people say, "Oh, this is it. We're going to solve the problem once and for all." It never solves the problem. It always guarantees a bigger and faster amnesty down the road. If that's what we want, that's great. But I don't think it's what we want. And that's why I think it's going to be defeated in the Congress.
Is that what we're stuck with,
Well,
Peter?
Look, the last amnesty was almost 30 years ago today. So I doubt somebody who's thinking about illegally immigrating here in 2014 is going to think, "Oh, I'll just come in and the cost will be lower because in 2044 there might be another amnesty." So I really don't think that that's the calculation that's going on here. At the same time, that I think we should learn the lessons of the 1986 package. And one of the lessons there is that the legal immigration system was not reformed. And so that, I think, is a necessary part of this package, which should be taken all at once. We really need comprehensive reform now. Piecemeal reform is just, it's going to be dealing with little pieces of the problem. We're just going to be stuck with this problem going forward. We need to seize this moment.
Jim, picking up on what you have been saying, though, and from your perspective, you're saying once we pass what appears to be at least some form of reforming the immigration system, we're just going to be flooded with people. Don't you think the United States can control, even with a reformed system, control who comes in and who lives in this country?
No, absolutely we cannot. I mean, that's clear, and I think the proponents are admitting that you know, border control is not sufficient. We can't control our borders. People are going to come in if the cost-benefit analysis favors their coming in. You know, Peter says, well, it's been a long time between amnesties. That's only because the amnesty proposal has been shot down politically in the interim. You know, the proponents tried to get this amnesty through earlier. It just didn't pass. Now they're going to try again. But the only way to deter people from coming in illegally. And here's the thing. If we want to enforce a numerical number, if we want to control immigration, as Peter says, he used the word control, you have to be willing to bar people from entering the United States who are not criminals. They're not national security threats. They look a lot like our ancestors. Are we willing to do that, to say no to them, and not because they're bad people, because they violate whatever numerical limitation we put in? And if they come here illegally, are we prepared to deport them? They look like our ancestors. That's a hard question. I admit it, that it's a hard question. If you're not willing to do that, if you say, no, there's no way I can deport hardworking people that look like our ancestors, well, then the ball game's over. Then we might as well say to the world, hey, every hardworking person that hasn't committed a felony, come on into the United States, because we can't bring ourselves to enforce immigration laws against you. That is a clear signal that we're sending when we grant an amnesty.
And that's Jan Teng, professor at Temple University Beasley School of Law. He served as an assistant commissioner at the Immigration and Naturalization Service of the U.S. Department of Justice. This was back from in 1990 to 1993. His blog, Brandywine to Broad Street, appears at WHYY's newsworks.org. Also with us is Peter Spiro, also a professor at Temple University Beasley School of Law. A former law clerk to Justice David Souter, specializes in international law, the constitutional aspects of U.S. foreign relations and immigration, author of a book called Beyond Citizenship, American Identity After Globalization. And we are debating and discussing what to do about immigration and our immigration laws, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Peter, do you think our, I guess, E-Verify, or the sort of employer part of immigration, that needs to be reformed, fixed, updated, improved?
So this is, I think, a necessary part of the package for political reasons, as President Obama set up yesterday, one of the four pillars of his package is to strengthen borders, and then another is to crack down on companies that hire illegals. I'm actually not so keen on these pillars, mostly because I don't think they're very effective, and they also impose great costs. So E-Verify is going to be expensive for businesses, including small businesses. You're going to be adding costs to a system that's going to create another a large part of an you're going to create another bureaucracy, or another part of a bureaucracy that's not known for its efficiency. You're going to have high error rates. This is something that, if it's a necessary part of the package, okay, we can live with it, but don't expect it to actually result in perfect enforcement of the immigration law.
Jan, let me pick up on something. This is part of the bipartisan proposal from the senators, basically tying any kind of improvement or overhaul of the immigration system to border security, basically saying, you know, once you get the border secure, then we can deal with immigration. Is that something that you could support? And I should say the president has a different perspective
right
on this.
I think the senator and President Obama are playing good cop, bad cop on this, you know, and they're arguing over the details when their joint goal is simply to get the amnesty through, you know, to give everyone work authorization immediately. And one of the senators, I think, was Schumer, who was very clear on that. You know, on the day the bill is signed, people are going to be able to get work authorization simply by signing up for it on the day the bill is signed. That is their joint goal. They're arguing over the details. But, you know, Peter is critical of E-Verify. I think E-Verify is much improved now. I heard a guy from the Migration Policy Institute, one of the advocacy groups, saying, yeah, they've come around on E-Verify, that a lot of the problems that it had early on are solved. E-Verify, I think, is a pretty good system and is used in some states and voluntarily by many employers. And one of my concerns about this amnesty bill is that they're talking about creating a new employee verification system other than E-Verify, which I think is a ridiculous idea. It would take years to do, and E-Verify is up and running. It's functional. It's getting better all the time, and people ought to use it.
Peter, do you share some of Jan's concerns about the impact of more immigrants, or even allowing illegal immigrants to essentially come above board, that would hurt the unemployment rate in this country, that people would be losing jobs because immigrants, either legal or illegal, or on their way to legality, would be taking their jobs?
So the views of the experts, the economists on this question, are quite mixed. And there are very strong arguments that immigrants, especially of the description of the undocumented population, do not take jobs away from American workers, and that, in fact, their participation in the economy helps the economy overall. And pretty clear free trade analogies to this. And so immigration is really – I mean, fixing immigration is an important part of American prosperity, that we're really shooting ourselves in the foot by putting up high walls to – high barriers to legal immigration. So I think that the red herrings there too. Now, that's not to say that there won't be some losers. I mean, globalization is creating losers in a number of different streams, one of which could be through – if you keep immigrants out, what happens? Jobs get outsourced. And so the bottom line is the same in many cases, that corporations have to move – their operations to where the labor is affordable. So
would that apply to high skill and low skill jobs equally or as well?
Well, I think on these kinds of things, I'm a free trader when it comes to labor as well as with respect to goods. And so in general, I think the whole will be benefited by lower levels of protection. There are ways to help out those who suffer through the various incidents of globalization. So you get retraining programs and other forms of redistributing the gains to those who take the hit. But I think a lot of those hits are going to happen anyway. And so the political dynamic here is that there's some minority, I think a shrinking minority, that is very intensely opposed to greater immigration because they face the greatest risk of loss. Whereas the greater majority now stands both to benefit and also now supports greater immigration levels. And I think in the end that's going to win out.
Factoring in globalization, Jan, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, big business has always been for open borders, both for goods and for people. You know, unlimited immigration to the United States keeps wages low in the United States and keeps profits up. There's no doubt about that. The Wall Street Journal's always said that. They say we need a constitutional amendment that there shall be open borders. So that's not surprising. We've heard these arguments before. You know, Peter says they're going to be losers. Well, you know, all the losers need to get on the phone to their members of Congress and start sending faxes and telling them that this thing needs to be defeated. I am confident it will be defeated. It has been defeated in 06, in 07. It's going to be defeated again for the same reason. You know, there are a lot of Democrats that are going to vote against it, including folks that are up for a re-election next year in 2014. And so there are going to be losers. And, you know, all those Americans, protracted unemployment in the United States, they're going to be losers.
We're almost up in a break here, Jan, but for those 11 million illegal immigrants, just make life so hard for them that they'll want to leave? Is that a viable proposal?
I think we need to have more enforcement to increase the number of people who leave the country voluntarily and deter people from thinking that it's worthwhile to come into the United States in violation of our laws, because it's always going to be easy to do. It's always going to be easy.
Peter?
The vast majority of those 11 million people are here to stay. When you use the Marco Rubio quote about immigrants being members of our churches, being neighbors, being co-workers, being students in our classrooms, all that applies to undocumented immigrants as well. They're part of our community. They're not going anywhere at the same time that they now have this legally disadvantaged status. And that there's a moral problem here that needs to be dealt with.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Peter Spiro, professor of law at Temple University. He's a former law clerk to Justice David Souter and wrote a book called Beyond Citizenship, American Identity After Globalization. Jan Ting, also professor of law at Temple University Law School, served as an assistant commissioner at the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And his blog, Brandywine to Broad Street, appears at WHYYsNewsWorks.org. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Delaware Humanities Forum supports WHYY and announces two events in Wilmington celebrating the work of noted portraitist Simi Knox. On Thursday, January 31st at 6:30 p.m., a preview of the documentary film about Knox's life and work, Strokes of Justice, premieres at Theater N. On Friday, February 1st from 5 to 9 p.m. is the opening of an exhibition of the artist's work at Gallery 919 Market. Details at dhf.org.
I'm Marty Moscowane. We're in the very first day, the very first few hours of the winter membership campaign here at WHYY. That's when we remind you that since you listen to WHYY and you're listening to Radio Times right now, you owe it to yourself to become a member. You decide what the service is worth and then make a phone call. Here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY. And you can also pledge online at WHYY.org. Radio Times provides in-depth interviews on local, national, and international issues, and we introduce you to interesting people and ideas. Today, we're debating and discussing proposals to overhaul the country's immigration system, an important issue in the news today, and talking with Eve Trout Powell about her new book, Tell This in My Memory. Radio Times hosts 2 hours of interviews a day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. Make a pledge, 1-888-345-9499. Thanks. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, debating Jan Ting and Peter Spiro, I should say, debating and discussing immigration and what immigration reform might look like. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Zach from City Line Avenue to join us. And Zach, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for the program.
Sure, you're welcome.
And thank you for my call.
Sure.
Taking my call. I'm originally from Ghana, and I'm immigrant. I'm legal immigrant. I came here on December the 27th, 2003.
2003.
Yes. When I was changing my status, when I was adjusting my status, I paid $675 back in those days. Before ex-President Bush left office, he increased adjustment pay, adjustment fee from $675 to $1,500. Nobody talks about it. Mm. It's only New York Times that report about this issue, just a brief. Now we're talking about illegal immigrants. One thing I don't hear Republicans or Democrats talking about is how much is it going to cost these poor folks to get either a pathway to citizenship or even a social security or driver's license.
Well, let me pick up on that, Zach, because you raised an important point to both what you had to pay essentially to become a legal immigrant and what future immigrants might have to pay as well. Go ahead, Peter.
So this is a really important point that often gets lost in the debate, and that is the dramatically increased fees that are involved for both legal immigration and then for different forms of regularization. And it may not sound like much, $675 to get a green card or even $1,500. And I'm sure a lot of people will think whatever the so-called penalty is that attaches to the regularization package will be reasonable. But this is a real burden on people that often don't have the means. And in the context of the Obama administration's Executive DREAM Act program, there's a fee of $465. And it's heartbreaking to see some of these individuals that basically everybody agrees now should be entitled to stay here who can't come up with that money. And so these are not unproblematic fees. Should it be free? Maybe not free, but it shouldn't be prohibitive, and there should be possibilities for waivers of the fees.
Go ahead, Jan.
Well, you know, if the applicants aren't going to pay, who's going to pay? Obviously, the taxpayers are going to end up paying. So, I mean, it's bad enough that we're going to have these amnesties, but then to ask the taxpayers, oh, by the way, you're going to pick up all the costs. Who's going to do all this processing? You know, if we're going to process 11 million people, who's going to do the processing? Like, our civil service employees will do it in their spare time? Like, you know, is that what's going to happen? Or are we going to have to hire a ton of new people and pay them enormous amounts of overtime? Somebody's going to have to do that work. We have experience with an amnesty. We did an amnesty in 86, and it was incredibly difficult and hard work and very, very expensive. Somebody's got to pay the bills. It shouldn't be the taxpayers. Again, I'm confident this is not going to pass, and we're not going to confront the question. But in looking at the legislation, we ought to look closely at how much taxpayer money is going to have to be appropriated to fund this amnesty.
Quick response, if you would, Peter. And then
loses sight of the benefits of bringing this population above board for everybody. Reasonable fees for people that can pay the fees, I agree with. it shouldn't be a barrier to equality, which in effect is what it amounts to on the ground.
Zach, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I'm going to go to George now, and George is calling us from Norristown. George, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Is that George? Oh, well, we're having some phone problems here. Let me go back to you, Jen, and we'll hopefully get some more folks on the air at 1-888-477-9499. One of the things I read, and this is I'm sort of repeating myself here, but nonetheless, so going back under the Obama administration, my understanding and everything I read is that deportations up pretty dramatically. I heard as many as 2 million people deported. I don't know if that's true or not, because that seems like a lot. The border crossings down something like 80%. There are 21,000 Border Patrol agents. There's 700 miles of fence. There's talk about using drones. Just how secure, and we're talking about the border between the U.S. and Mexico, just how secure should that border be?
Well, the Obama administration has been laying the groundwork for this amnesty bill and trying to make the case. And they've been making a statistical case. You know, they're saying, oh, record numbers of deportations. Well, how do you count deportations? You know, they're taking a lot of people that would have voluntarily deported and putting them through proceedings and then counting them as deportations. Mm-hmm. So the policy, however, is clear that they have issued a policy statement that no one's supposed to be deported unless they've been serious criminal convictions, meaning either a felony conviction or three or more misdemeanor convictions, or they're a national security threat. I mean, everyone else is supposed to be a benefit of prosecutorial discretion. And so I think that policy has given a green light to a lot of illegal immigration to say, hey, don't commit any serious crimes, don't be a national security threat, and the government isn't going to come after you.
But that might be a good thing, don't you think? I mean, to tell people not to break laws.
A lot more people are going to come in. Again, I think there are billions of people that want to take that deal. That's a good deal for a lot of poor people in the world, and we get that. If we were in their shoes, we would take that deal too.
Go ahead, Peter, and then we'll try George again.
Border enforcement isn't perfect, but it's certainly good enough to keep out the billions of people that Jan is talking about here. One thing that gets lost in the mix here is the cost of enforcement. Last year, there was $18 billion spent on border enforcement, which amounts to $600 per year for every person in the United States. That's our bill, $600 a year. $18 billion is 25% more than the combined budgets of the FBI, DEA, Secret Service, Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco. So enforcement is expensive. I think it's good enough. I mean, talking about drones and more fence is really just sort of a way of making people feel better about the border enforcement being done and keeping those billions out that Jan is worried about.
Very quickly,
let me just say, I agree with Peter. Immigration enforcement is very, very expensive. And if our position is we don't care how many people come in, we don't care how big our population gets, we should stop spending that money. We should just declare the borders open and say we're going to prosecute criminals and national security threats, and that's it. We could save a ton.
Oh, let me get George. We're going to try George again from Norristown. And George, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning, Marty.
Good morning.
I have a landscaping company, and I heavily rely on the Hispanic population. Of the 18 years I've been in business, I've had everybody on the books. We take all different forms of ID, write them down on what's required. Of the 11 million undocumented workers, what percentage of those do they think are actually paying their taxes? Well, I know the industry that I'm in, like I said, relies heavily on the Hispanic population. And, I get letters occasionally saying the Social Security number doesn't match up, but everybody's paying their taxes. And when that happens, I confront the employee and they either correct it or occasionally they have to quit.
It's interesting, George.
I'll take my answer off the air.
No, thanks a lot. Go
so
ahead,
two
Peter.
Points here. It's a common misconception that undocumented aliens don't pay taxes. In fact, they're pretty compliant, partly because they understand that if the regularization possibility comes down the line, that regularization may be contingent on having paid taxes. The other thing is that there are a large number of undocumented who are working off the books, who nonetheless are paying into Social Security, and that is, according to some estimates, really floating the system now. Is Social Security counts. Fake Social Security accounts that will never be reclaimed, which are just going to everybody else's benefit.
Which looks like a good segue to David from Reading. And David, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. That would be number one. We'll try.
Hello. David.
There we go, David. Go
Hi.
Ahead. You're on the air.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have dealt with immigration my whole life. My wife is an immigrant from Haiti. My mother was an immigrant from Nicaragua, and my father's parents were immigrants from Italy. So I dealt with immigration. And my concern with opening the borders and saying, or just the whole allowing whoever's here to stay here is, that's going to be a huge cost to the system. You know, they're talking about, the comment was just made that there are people paying the Social Security but not withdrawing benefits from it. Eventually, once they're citizens, all those benefits have to be paid. And the idea that jobs are leaving the country because lack of workforce, when we're talking about roughly, what, 8 to 10% unemployment in the country, I think jobs are leaving the country because it's cheaper to do it elsewhere. And once all these, once everyone becomes a citizen, the cost doesn't go down for businesses to do, you know, heavy labor work.
David,
it doesn't get any cheaper to make an iPad here in the United States.
Yeah, of course.
Well, go ahead, Jen.
That's right. One of the byproducts of amnesty is renewed claims against the Social Security system. All these people that have been paying in with no prospect of getting their money out are going to make their claims, and I think our social services system is going to be under tremendous pressure. We're not doing a great job of delivering services right now, but it's going to be worse. Everything is going to be worse with more demands placed on the system. We're having trouble funding healthcare. How are we going to fund healthcare for another 100 million people? That's without the amnesty. How are we going to fund good education for the children of all the people coming in? We're not doing so great right now. How are we doing, about narrowing the equality gap between rich and poor in the United States? We're not doing so great now. And if we bring in enormous numbers of poor people and less educated people, which is what the amnesty is going to do, we're going to aggravate all of those problems. I think all the problems that the caller points out with are very real. And let me just say about the landscaping
business. Peter's about to jump through the microphone there, but go ahead, Jim.
You know, I mean, in a previous recession in the 1980s, they said, well, unemployed Americans can just go out and mow lawns, you know, and that was actually a realistic possibility. You can't do that anymore. The competition from immigrants is too strong, and illegal immigrants undermine those legal businesses that do their best to comply with the law.
Go ahead, Peter.
I guess just 2 points there. One is that if immigrants don't mow lawns, then nobody mows lawns, as we've seen in the experience in Arizona and Alabama, both of which passed these laws, which resulted in an exodus. It's not as if that exodus of undocumented immigrants cleared a lot of space for American workers to secure new employment. The other point is, Jan is making a point about the gulf between rich and poor. Well, this population of 11 million has this very low glass ceiling placed on it because of their undocumented status. And so to the extent that their position is regularized, that they're given a path to citizenship, they have a path to better themselves. These are hardworking people. These are not people who are, generally speaking, a burden on the system. They want to live the American dream. They can't do it as undocumented aliens, at least not fully. And so that's what the comprehensive immigration reform promises.
And that's Peter Spiro. He's a professor of law at Temple University. Also with us, Jan Ting, professor of law at Temple University as well. And we're getting two very different perspectives on immigration. And I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. You know, it's funny that when we talk about immigration and reforming the system or changing the system, we always think about Mexico. But we don't have an immigration problem when it comes to Canada. What does that tell us, Jan?
Well, we have an immigration problem with a lot of places. Even if Mexico economy recovers, and obviously everyone hopes it will, and the immigration pressure is reduced. I mean, there's still Central America, right? There's still Africa. There's still increasingly Europe. People are looking for a place to land. So I think immigration, the pressures on illegal immigration are always going to be with us. It may be less from Mexico than in other places in the future. I hope it will be, but we're going to have to be dealing with it. And the reality is still I honestly think you can count in the billions the number of people who would like to accept the deal that's being offered, and we are sending a clear message to them. Get yourself into the United States by hook or by crook any way you can. When you build up sufficient numbers, we will grant another amnesty. I think that message is clear. If that's what we want, then this amnesty bill makes a lot of sense. I do think we should save a ton of money by stopping spending on immigration enforcement. It's so expensive, as Peter says. But if we're going to spend the money on immigration enforcement, we actually have to enforce the law. We actually have to turn away people who don't qualify under our laws. And if they come here illegally, we actually have to make some effort to send a message that they're not allowed to stay here.
Go ahead, Peter.
So nobody's proposing open borders. So I think that's a question of allowing some greater amount of legal immigration to meet the great demands that our economy is placing on the system. One other thing that gets lost here, and this is raised by non-Mexican legal immigration, is that an estimated third to half of the undocumented population entered the country legally and then stayed in violation of the terms of that entry. And many of those individuals are from other countries, for instance, from the Philippines. And so that's not really, I mean, that's beyond border enforcement. There you're talking interior enforcement, which is even more expensive.
We're almost out of time here, Jim, but you're pessimistic that this is going to pass. You don't think that the growing minority population, the growing number of Hispanics, that's not going to change the political calculation on this issue?
I would say I'm optimistic that this amnesty bill will be defeated.
Well, I'm optimistic that it
will be defeated as it was in 06 and as it was in 07. You know, you can count the noses, and the reality is they don't have the votes for it. If they had the votes, they just push it through and pass it. They wouldn't have this dog and pony show that's going out there trying to beat the drum, trying to pressure the waiverers to fall in line under political imperatives. The reality is they don't have the votes. It's not going to pass.
What do you think,
it's going to be a long, hard slog, and there are going to be many details that are going to be hard fought, and some and not so small details that are going to be hard fought. But you wouldn't be getting the likes of John McCain and Jeff Flake putting their political reputations on the line if they didn't think that something was going to happen here.
Well, to be continued. My thanks to both of you. A very spirited discussion about immigration. Peter Spiro, thank you very much for joining us.
Great to be here, Marty.
And Jan Ting, thank you for joining us as well.
Great show.
Great show for us as well. Both of them professors at Temple University Law School. You can read Jan Ting's blog, Brandywine to Broad Street, at WHYY's newsworks.org site. And you can also read Peter Spiro's book. It's called Beyond Citizenship, American Identity After Globalization. To learn more about Radio Times, including information about Facebook, Twitter, email, the archives, podcasts, satellite radio, and more, go to whyy.org/radiotimes. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.